Hola, I'm Adela Yelton, and thank you for joining us at Latina South. Latina South welcomes friendly conversations with Latinas and friends who live, work, and play throughout the South and Southeast. We'll enjoy some savory bits of wisdom while we share about what it takes to thrive in life while holding on to the best of what makes us Latinas in the South. Welcome.
Being from the South and being Latina, or at least in my experience, my journey, so many times I felt like they were working against each other. And back to that feeling of ni de aquí, ni de allá. As I look back, I see so much complexity in that story.
Today we welcome Elaine Uten, co-founder of the nonprofit Latinx Ed, where she focuses on Latinx youth identity development and leadership in North Carolina. Elaine holds a master's degree in education from Harvard, and in 2018, she was recognized on Forbes' 30 Under 30 education list. Let's listen as Elaine talks about growing up in the South, her Peruvian and faith-based roots, and being a first-generation college student. She also gets real with us about how coaching helped her through some transitions, including growing an organization while being a mom. Hola, Elaine. Welcome to Latina South.
Thank you. Hola. I'm excited to be here.
You mentioned to me that you grew up between two orchards, a pecan tree and a peach tree orchard. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, very, very rural space. But yeah, orchards around. It was very luxurious too to be able to go out and pick pecans or pick a peach to eat when they were in season. So that was a very special memories of my upbringing.
I don't know if you can get more Southern than that in the United States. And so tell me more about your identity as a Latina and growing up in the South.
My journey actually begins in Peru. So that's where I was born. But I was raised in the South. My family came over when I was really young. And so I essentially spent my most formative years, which in many ways 2 to 8, in South Georgia. And so I was able to grow up in a very rural setting, very country kind of space. We had cows in the backyard that were not ours, but they were the neighbor's cows. And so there's just memories that I have of being very much in an outdoor space. So we had like a little pond in the back, what we called the catfish pond, where there were a lot of catfish in there. And so we'd go, swimming, things that I'm like have not done in a long time. But swimming in like these clay ponds. But it was a very, a very, in some ways, nostalgic upbringing and something that you might see in a magazine of like, or what people might imagine if you don't live in the South, what the South might look like. That was maybe it. But being able to be in nature and being raised in those spaces, that was part of the journey. Let me switch over to the other part of the question, which is being Latina, which is, it gets a little more complicated. And so I was actually thinking about this and I was thinking about how I'm going to tell a story because I haven't really gotten a chance to tell the story in a way that kind of outlines how I ended up in the South and kind of what that journey then became. So it might be a little bit of a longer answer, but it starts off with my parents. So both of my parents were born in Peru, but my dad was a missionary kid. And so spent his most formative years in the jungle of Peru as a missionary kid. And then my mother was born in the mountains. Her generations, like they go way back, even have an indigenous roots as well. And so they essentially met and got married. And part of that journey coming to the U.S., unpacking also religion and faith and that kind of part of my family's journey. My dad also played a really big role in kind of where we ended up in the South in particular, because he was really passionate about community living. That was kind of his experience with indigenous groups in Peru. And so that was something he really cherished and really wanted to think about how that could essentially be in a faith-based setting. And so there was a movement and a community that was living in that style, kind of living collectively, being raised in this type of community that was more conservative. It was also, pretty religious. And there's a lot to unpack there. But the reason I share that is because faith was a really big part of that upbringing. And so when I think about identity and my first memories of like identity, I think about actually faith and just the emphasis on my religion or my faith in particular. And so I really, I feel like my recognition or my cognizance of like being Latina or even being a woman or all these other facets of who I was really started to kind of formulate a little bit slower just because there was a different emphasis on who I was as a Christian, for example. And so that's something that I think about just with the South and the influence of religion and Christianity and whatnot in the South. Like that's an experience I think a lot of other people have too, but it does not often, I don't really get to experience the connection with Latinidad and kind of understanding the connections there just because of that unique coming from a mixed race background and my dad also being white and my mom being Peruvian and also darker skin. Like those were things that I was aware of as a kid, but I didn't have any like larger cultural context for, right? I didn't understand how that fit into the bigger world or what that meant in the South or any of those connections. And so when I was going to school, there was essentially no information on that either. And so I was not really getting exposed to history or even culture outside of the home. And thankfully, my mother and actually my grandmother would come up from Peru to visit and also support because my little family was growing. We were a small, you know, a lot of kids and having a great time with that. I don't remember a time where I didn't have a sibling. It was challenging to be able to capture a lot of that at home too, because my mom in many ways, you know, was trying to also acclimate to the US, to the South, to this little community and trying to do things like, you know, learn English or improve her English or whatnot, because she actually had started learning English when she was back in Peru. There was moments where I got to really experience her through food, which was amazing because my mom is amazing chef and baker and everything. And she did this thing where she would create a lot of the recipes that she was learning from the South. So like peach cobbler, but kind of make it her own or like add a Peruvian twist to it. So that's kind of how I started to learn about my Latina side, right? Or my Peruvian side was really learning through food or little stories that she would share or sometimes music. And then also through my grandmother who only spoke Spanish. So I was learning to speak Spanish to her, trying to kind of connect to that part of who I was, but just keeping on the real, my dad's culture was very dominant, or just who he was a dominant figure in my family. And I'm just getting real vulnerable because it's part of the journey, you know? And so I really didn't get to experience like the full depths of who my mom was just because of being in that more conservative setting. I was able to go back to Peru, thankfully, a few times too when I was before I was 10 years old. So those experiences were super formative as well. I've started to unpack them very much so in the space of education because I learned a lot about who I was through school and unfortunately also a lot about who I wasn't.
You're starting to unpack the many different experiences and the variety of experiences. And I'd like to hear more about when you did go back and visit Peru.
I think one of the most memorable trips was right around, I think I was 9 years old, and we ended up spending 2 months in the jungle. So I guess this is an important context to add here of like kind of what that journey was like, because this is where my dad's experience part of life comes into play, is that my dad is the son of William Cameron Townsend, who is the founder of Wycliffe Bible Translators or Translation. And so that is the world's largest Bible translating organization to this date. And so there's a lot of history there and a lot of impact in the field of linguistics. And part of the mission was to essentially ensure that every group of people had access to the Bible in their own tongue, in their own language. And so missionaries would live with groups of indigenous groups and then essentially create an alphabet, a written alphabet, that, and then teaching people how to read and write in their own language. But also what's interesting about this is preserving the language at the same time because of globalization and people just wanting, you know, whether it was jobs or whatnot, younger people heading off to the big city and then those traditions being lost just because people were learning Spanish or Spanish became the dominant language there. And so it was just trying to also preserve those languages became part of that mission.
As a child, you were able to witness that firsthand, that important work.
Yeah, I think for me it's always interesting telling the story because I feel like I have two different brains when I tell this story. And that's part of the journey of being the child of a mixed race couple, but also two very different cultural backgrounds, but that really are connected in some way. So if I switch to my other side of my brain where I think about my mom and my Latina side and what that meant it was really interesting to go back to Peru and then start to understand all of these different cultural elements, and also just how relational it was, how familial it was, and in many ways that became an important part of thinking about who I was as a Latina. I actually thinking a little bit ahead in the future when I went back when I was in college and spent Christmas with my grandmother and my family in Peru, and I just remember how much love and how much affection was in that space, and it was something that I was felt really almost healed by. I don't know, there's something that I think about not being in those spaces here, and I think about culture as also a way of healing. And so for me, it felt like I was experiencing just like a bit of freedom in expression and loving and caring for each other. And so that was another really big part that I was able to connect with.
You're founder of the organization Latinx Ed. When you talk about love and connection, I automatically think about the impact of the work that you're doing. I'd love to hear more about that organization and what it means to you.
I've shared a little bit about my experience being born in Peru, raised in the South, and part of that journey is also being a learner in the South and what that meant to actually be going to school and not having access to history or teachers or curriculum that really reflected me and my culture. And so part of that journey, I'm also a first-generation college student. And so once I got to high school, it was a true challenge. And there was different layers of the experience with the teachers I was having. I had some pretty jarring experiences in high school with essentially teachers that would say things like, Black people shouldn't marry white people, and kind of backing that up with the Bible. And but I shared that story, and it's small, but it's to just kind of give you the context of the type of schooling experiences I was in, and ones mm-hmm. that were not really embracing the cultural wealth that I had.
You're early in career. I mean, this did not happen a long time ago. And, yeah. and my guess is that those, call them jarring experiences, are still happening today in the South.
Absolutely. And that's part of the problem and part of why we do what we do, because not being able to be in learning environments and have this learning experience that really allows you to be your true authentic self and bringing your culture and bringing in all the things that make you you, but then on top of that, having to combat negative messages or literal stereotypes plus discrimination in the classroom where you're supposed to be learning and being able to evolve and make mistakes and be able to use the lens that you have from all the different identities that you carry. And when that's not happening, there's a lot of harm that also people are enduring in this space, but also that impact later years once you're in your career, once you're continuing to pursue further education. And so for me, that was part of my journey. And when I got to high school, and I think I made the decision to apply to college when I was in 11th grade. I noticed that a lot of my peers were doing that. I knew at that point my parents were divorced, and I knew that there was a large responsibility on my shoulders to be the first and to also support my family and figure out how I could further essentially mobilization, because I also come from my mom's side. Just there's been a lot of cycles of poverty that have been broken in this process. And so education has been that thing that has been viewed, especially by my mom and my grandmother, as this piece of, I guess the word that comes to mind is mobilization. Like, this is how we can create a better future for our family. And so I applied to college. It was a very jarring experience and also very like lonely and very scary. And it was a lot of and very personal too, asking a lot of really personal questions about who I was, questions that I had not really been asked during my schooling experience. So I hadn't really had a chance to really unpack until that college application. And I thankfully had a mom who was not going to let me give up, because it was very, I had a lot of doubt in myself, even though I was on paper a high achieving student. I was valedictorian of my high school, but I still didn't have the confidence in who I was, or didn't think I was going to be able to even, you know, get into college. Like, that was the level of fear I had. My mom really helped me pull me out of it. And part of why I share that story is because it all leads to the work that I do now. But the experience that was really pivotal was actually going to college and being able to go to UNC Chapel Hill, which is where I went, and just going through that first generation college experience. When I graduated from UNC, I had discovered finally after changing my major like 6 times that my major would be middle grades education. And it felt like it was the connection of so many amazing things in my life that were just constantly bringing me back to education. And that ended up taking me to Harvard Graduate School of Education, where I was able to sink my teeth even further into my master's, which was around technology, innovation, education. And I think people are like, I'm bringing this full circle, because technology to me, even though I think people think immediately of digital technology, but for me, it was about thinking of people and organizations and resources and thinking all about that as tools and thinking about it as technology, things to be able to that work together to create something. And so I had the opportunity to take my first and the first ethnic studies course that was officially offered at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And that ethnic studies course just flipped my world upside down. Felt like it, all of the history that I had been craving as a young person in school that I was not getting, it was essentially captured in this course. And I was really able to learn about the history of marginalized communities in the US and really get deep into thinking of different systems of oppression too, that were holding our people back and that are holding our people back, and being able to kind of connect the dots here with that experience of being a mentor and thinking about how we were mobilizing for our community, but thinking about how important this information is for our young people to also access information about themselves, about their history, came about in starting the nonprofit that I run today. Starting this with a colleague of mine, Ricky Hurtado. And so we were able to bolden our vision of how do we change this experience for Latinx families in the South, and also thinking about our proximity to North Carolina. And so part of this, of what we do now, especially as a nonprofit and also a new nonprofit, because we are about to hit our third year, later this year, we'll hit year three.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been the journey, because I also became a mom at that first year of starting a nonprofit. So life has been a whirlwind. It started off with our flagship program, which is Somos Carolina. And that program is about identity and leadership development for young people, and starting in middle school and going through high school, and being able to help students unpack who they are as Latinx individuals, or even thinking about even further their respective cultures and how they connect to their roots. And then thinking about all of the gifts and the talents that we get to take from that culture and then apply it into our roles as leaders and learners. And then being able to evolve and let ourselves really play that role and see ourselves in that role and be able to think about all the possibilities that we could do for our community. That program started off first. In many ways, it's also a foundation for something like college, because in many ways, students are able to connect to their past and understand more about where they come from, which creates more clarity on where they want to go. And so for us, that Somos has been a intention that students are laying to then pursue something like college. And also on top of it, the name Somos Carolina, it's also a statement that we belong and that we are part of this community. And I didn't feel like that when I was a young person. I didn't know how I fit into Waxaw, North Carolina. I didn't know what the, you know, role I could play. And I didn't see my culture being represented or appreciated in many spaces. And so being able to flip that narrative and flip that experience on its head and say, no, we are creating spaces where we belong and where we are part of this fabric of this state. And so, and also being able to dream about all of the things that we can do to improve our environment.
You had mentioned to me earlier, there's a phrase that you hear a lot. It's ni de aquí, ni de allá. Mm-hmm. But you're flipping that. And what do you say?
So we say, somos de aquí, somos de allá. We are from here and we are from there.
That's absolutely so powerful. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the mission of your work, focusing on identity and leadership development, at least with Somos Carolina and Latinx Ed. And who more an appropriate person to do that than you, because that's your lived experience. And I'm sure young people see that in you as their role model. I also want to mention that, you know, you have a master's of education from Harvard. You were named Forbes 30 Under 30. In my humble opinion, we need to be yelling your name from the rooftops. You know, in a lot of ways, you've made it, you've arrived. What do you hope to accomplish? I mean, you co-founded this organization, Latinx Ed. What's next?
That is a great question. I actually want to return to what you said really quick there, because I'm definitely honored to have made it to this, in many ways, a peak, because of the sacrifices of my family, of my loved ones. You know, they have definitely pushed me to this place, and it was quite the journey, and it was very arduous. But I think one thing I've been thinking about is reaching this peak, and it's a romanticized peak, right? Like, you've made it to Harvard, you made it to these places that, you know, are so in many ways exclusive. And so, and the lack and the representation of Latinx folks at this level are, it is, you know, very slim. But I also look back and I see the journey and how it could have been so different. You know, essentially what I'm doing and what the future is for us is being able to change that experiences for students. I'm honored. I feel very relieved and proud to have made it this far, but I also recognize all the barriers that I had to jump over to make it to this level. And it's not right. You know, and I think when we think about issues of equity and educational equity, there's so much that has to change. And so for us, that's what's next, is really pushing the field of education, especially in the South, especially North Carolina, to think about, I'm talking to leaders here, but how they're using their power, their resources to really create spaces that are truly, or I would say truly honoring, recognizing, and serving the needs of Latinx families, and also families of color in the South. And so we have a long ways to go there. And while I'm again, relieved to have made it through a system that bring in the work of Dr. Bettina Love, and she maps out essentially the educational survival complex. And I feel like I survived, you know, I feel like I made it. I don't know if I thrived in that journey. And so what I really want for our young people, I want them to be thriving. I want them to be able to make mistakes and not feel like it's going to be the end of the world because they made a mistake. When I felt that way when I was in the position, like I felt like there was no other option but an A. I felt like there was no other option, but
the stakes were so high.
Exactly. And it's such a privilege to be able to make those mistakes and to really be able to lean into the complexity of being human. Cause that's part of being a learner. That's part of being human, is being able to be and have these complexities of triumphs and of struggle and just part of the journey. But being able to be in a space that also affirms you and that sees the best in you and that, you know, wants to push you because of who you are, not in spite of who you are. And so Latinx Ed for us is that love letter to our younger selves. It's our love letter to other Southern Latinx folks who are really trying to change the game and trying to change the experiences of what it's like to be in school systems in the South as Latinx folks. That means increasing bicultural, bilingual leadership. That means having teachers that represent our culture. That means being able to make sure that our Latinx families have a seat at the decision-making table. There's so many ways that we are reimagining what this could be like. And our vision for the future is essentially a culturally sustaining system that is really recognizing and honoring the needs of our community. But part of that process means to really reckon with what we have right now, to dismantle different parts and then also redesign different aspects of it too. And it's complicated. I'm not going to say it's not for the faint of heart, but we're in the trenches, and that's what we're working towards.
Well, thank you for writing that love letter. It would have been nice to have that love letter to read as my younger self. It's a lot of work. I know it takes a lot of time, energy, resources. What would you say about your support structure and what that looks like for you?
I think support for me, I'll tell you what it's looked like and maybe what it could look like in the future. It has been being able to have the freedom to really dream. And I think that's part of why we decided to start this nonprofit. And part of what you noted already, I already noticed it, but we are also Latinx led, and that's our leadership, right? So we are essentially building the spaces for our communities, and the fact that we have our own lived experiences is a really big game-changing part of this journey too, right? And being able to have this, to be in this position. So for us, having that freedom to reimagine, to redesign and do the work ourselves, because as much as we are ready to preach about it, you know, part of it is also us getting into the trenches and designing it for ourselves. And I think that's been a really amazing experience, and being able to have the support of our community behind us, whether that is people who have been supporting physically our work through Latinx Ed, or being able to, we have such an amazing group of professionals, young professionals too, that really feel connected to our vision because of their also recent experiences through the system, and feel really committed to whether that's showing up as a panelist for our young people or being able to connect with our students that are also trying to figure out their own paths. And have essentially, I think part of what our group is doing is we have made it to certain levels, right, of our own educational journey or our own professional careers. And it's so important for us to turn around and open the door for the next generation. And so being able to contribute in that way has been awesome. I will say personally, as a what I'm now calling a mom entrepreneur, even though that term is new to me, I'm like, this is very much in capturing what I am as a young mom, a new mom in some ways, and also a entrepreneur, a social entrepreneur starting this nonprofit. I think about other women, especially since this is the Latina South podcast, let's go. So other women who are in that position of trying to also, you know, to lean into their leadership and lean into their learning. A support that I've really, really benefited from is actually coaching. And I think about my first year of Latinx Ed. I was starting a new nonprofit. I was pregnant. I gave birth to my son and went on maternity leave within the first year. And it was such a really hard experience. It was hard because I had to also reset a lot of how I had been operating just because of, you know, making it to certain spaces like Harvard or Fulbright. It required a certain work ethic and a certain mindset to really get to that level. And part of it was just complete workhorse, drive, 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 you know, just really pushing forward in that way. And it burned, you know, the burnout is real. So if anybody else has been there or felt that, it is a really hard experience that I very much recognize and have been in it. And coaching was, I've been able to have now 3 coaching experiences. And the first one was around mindset coaching. And it was a breath of fresh air. Like I felt so much healing from that journey. It was only 3 months, but being able to work with Dr. Anise Fisher, who was my coach, just being able to teach me about mindsets and how we operate on a daily basis, that was such a healing experience for me. I think I released a lot of mindsets that had once served me, but at this point were no longer serving me. And being in that pause of being hard stop of being a new mom and then also starting this nonprofit, there was a lot of healing in that process, but it was a really kind of like another, I guess the word for this conversation is jarring because it was a lot.
Use the word jarring a lot and momhood is jarring. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But you know, there are a lot of things that it's a transition for sure. And you know what? I appreciate you kind of being vulnerable and sharing that with us around how jarring it can be, but that also you did reach out and realize, at least for yourself and mm-hmm. where you're at, that coaching was a tool for you to help you get through some transitions. If you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more about that, how did you find your first coach? And what would you say was the one thing you mentioned mindset, but what was the one thing that you took away from that experience?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad I get to talk about coaching because I'm ready to preach it from the rooftops. but also so there's a few layers here. So right before I gave birth, I was in the process of planning Somos Carolina, which was going to be our first flagship program that I've talked about. And I was like, how am I going to do this? I'm planning this. We have this next summer. I'm going to give birth. Okay. So, you know, I also had at the time we were a small team, but a very supportive team that were really just supportive of me taking a pause and being able to, you know, carry the load while I was gone. And I essentially gave birth, took 2 months off, and then I was back at the office. I noticed maybe some just ways that it worked. I could have taken an extra month, but just because of how short staffed we were, I had to get back. But part of the compromise was that I would bring my son. And so that was also unique. At that time, I was also trying to figure out breastfeeding and all the stuff that comes with being a new mom. And I was trying to really, this is part of me trying to reimagine what it meant to be a working mom, because my mom was a stay-at-home mom for the majority of my childhood. And so I never really got to see what that could look like of being a working mom and also taking care of a child. So over here I was for that first year, taking my son to work, you know, creating spaces. And thankfully I had, again, supportive friends that would stop by and babysit, or even students that I would teach in college students drop by and just play with my son. And it took a village, honestly, that first year. But right after I came back from maternity leave, I was designing this program. I was pulling essentially designing this whole thing. And then the summer hit. So the reason I'm telling you all this is because it was a stressful time, because now we're bringing out we're launching this amazing program and I'm still bringing my son to work. And thankfully my husband had a little bit of a gap, so he was also coming to work to help out. It was wild, but I was so, after that experience, even though I just push through it, I felt like I was on intense burnout. And I was it was to the point that I was physically feeling sick because I was working so much. Yeah. And, you know, it never stopped too, because then it was mom. It was either wearing the mom hat or the work hat or both of the hats at the same time. And so I remember talking to Ricky, my co-founder, and he, you know, I was sharing the stress that I was under, and he's like, have you ever thought about coaching? And when he said that, I was like, are you kidding me? What time? What time do I have to actually go and this do this coaching thing that you speak of?
It sounds like one more thing, one exactly. more thing I have to do.
Yeah. Exactly. And I pushed back, and Ricky and I have this funny relationship where he will like plant these seeds and eventually they will come to fruition. Because I laughed back at that experience, because I would say maybe 2 weeks later, one of my friends from Harvard actually, who had gone through a doctoral experience, she and had her degree. She was essentially posting on social media that she was doing coaching and mindset coaching. And then it just kind of brought me back to that conversation with Ricky, who had shared his experience with coaching and said that that had been really helpful for him. And I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe this is what I need to be able to, you know, invest in for myself. And I had just kind of in some ways hit rock bottom and nothing was working anymore, that I just, it was a moment of desperation too, that I, you know, essentially reached out and said, and talked to Anise and see if this could be a coach for me. And so in that process of going through this coaching experience with Anise, which again was learning a lot about mindsets and also compassion for myself, so much healing came out of it. It was really hard because I had to really, 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 really reckon with myself and the mindsets and the journey that I had had. And part of my initial feeling was like, I wanted to just judge the mess out of myself. I was like, how could you have thought that way? How could you have been that way? How could you have done things that way? And part of what she would gently guide me in this experience or remind me was that all of those experiences and all of the mindsets I had had in the past had protected me, that my mind was designed to protect me. And so in those moments and in those environments, there are certain mindsets that I had adopted were protecting me. In some ways, they were guiding me. In some ways, that they helped me survive those spaces.
What's one example?
One example was the one that I wrestled with the whole time during this coaching experience, which was, if I do something new or if I change, I will fail. And that was like, oh, like when I got to that point where I could actually name it, whew, like it brings back emotions now, because I'm like, it got to the point that I was doing so much new things. Obviously, I was starting this nonprofit, but I was also teaching new classes and just doing so many new things. And I was so anxious, anxiety ridden through the whole process. I was worried, all the self-doubt of like, what if I don't do it right? What if I, you know, make a mistake? What if I don't give the experience that I, you know, it was all about these connections to how I would perform. Part of that mindset, again, when I was younger, that mindset, if I change or if I do something new, I will fail. Sticking to what was familiar and sticking to what I knew was part of how I made it to certain, you know, made it out, right? It was, it minimized the amount of mistakes I would make because I wasn't trying as, you know, many new things, you know, things like that, but it helped me, it protected me. And now I was at this point in my life that it no longer served, but I didn't have to destroy it, if that makes any sense. Part of the releasing, my instinct was like, let me just beat this out of me, like, get this out, I don't want anymore, you know, and what she would tell me was like, that's, you know, we don't have to judge ourselves and our past. What we can do is compassionately let it go and compassionately release it. And also in some ways, you know, be grateful for it, because that is me. Like, that mindset was part of me, and that was my mind protecting me. So what I can do is compassionately let my mind know, thank you for protecting me. And now we no longer need this. You know, we can release this and we can take on a new mindset. For example, with that example would be, if I do something new or if I change, it will be a learning experience. It will be a learning opportunity, be an opportunity to grow. And that's kind of what that process looked like for me. And so I bring that back to my work. And the other part of your question was, you know, how it's been connecting here. And I feel like I, as much as I've been designing Latinx Ed and helping design our programs, I've been doing very similar growth personally. And that has just been a beautiful intersection here, where we're able to even strengthen how we offer things. And so one of Somos, for example, Somos Carolina, one aspect of it in the summer is actually a coaching program. And the other part about coaching is that it is something that is not often accessible. Like coaching, especially things like executive coaching or whatnot, if your organization is not paying for it, it's a big cost. And there's another layer, a barrier to be able to receive those type of resources. So what we've done through our design of Somos Carolina is actually take coaching and democratize it for our youth and be able to provide them an experience that they also get to go through this peer group coaching experience, but also receive a coach that is someone who can connect to their own experiences as being Latinx and being raised in the South, but also being able to kind of guide in that process and through that journey of in many ways, mindsets, in many ways, goals, but thinking about who we are as Latinx folks, how do we learn and how do we lead, and being able to work towards our goals in those areas.
What an impact is, and when you talk about democratizing coaching, woo, I feel you on that. Because listen, I used to work in corporate human resources. And let me tell you, CEOs have coaches, CEOs of billion-dollar organizations. I mean, that's just part of the tools that they have accessible to them to be able to do their work and make an impact. You've done a lot. And I'll put you side by side with any billion-dollar CEO any day. Okay, Elaine, I'll put you side by side. Keep on keeping on. And I appreciate you sharing that story. Well, Elaine, I've learned so much from you, and I know that you're just getting started, and I wish you much, much success in your career and in your work and in your mission. What can we do to best support you and your work?
Well, thank you so much. First of all, I'm honored to be in this space. I feel very humbled to be able to serve the community that raised me in so many ways. So if you're interested in supporting Latinx Ed, our Somos Carolina program, also there was one extra program I can share too, is our College de Consejos program. And that is essentially, we're able to offer culturally relevant services across the state of North Carolina to any Latinx 11th or 12th grader that is interested in applying to college. Essentially, we provide coaches that help students through that application process, and being able to, whether that's help support essay writing to helping navigate things like FAFSA. And so being able to provide that support system that also helps counselors too, that are having intense workloads, but being able to provide that additional support for students and families that are pursuing college, because that is another complex journey. In many ways, it's a game. And so being able to have a coach to support you through that process is essential. For Latinx Ed, we're growing, and we are even being able to expand new initiatives as well. So if you're interested in staying in the loop, our website is www.latinx.org. And also I will say that, you know, if you are able to make a financial contribution, please come through, because obviously that's part of the challenge of running a nonprofit, is being able to make sure that we're able to build capacity to do this work. And part of that,
got to pay the bills.
Exactly. So feel me on that level. But there's so many different ways. I think part of it's just getting connected. So heading over to our website, getting connected, latinxed.org, and being able to reach out too if there's anything that you'd like to connect with. We're happy. We're always trying to build a family, and would love to have anyone join this movement.
And we'll include those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
And then finally, what words of wisdom would you like to leave with our listeners today?
I think it is, what has been on my mind today is really allowing ourselves to experience the complexity and the nuance that is our own humanity. And I say that because being from the South and being Latina, or at least in my experience, my journey, so many times I felt like they were working against each other. And back to that feeling of ni de aquí, ni de allá. As I look back, I see so much complexity in that story, that we're happy, that we're sad. And part of me wants to push everything into the happy bucket. And I want to just find that and create those experiences. But I think the more that I live life and the more that I lean into that experience, part of it has been also just allowing myself to have that complexity of emotions and complexity of experiences. And I think about times where I haven't been able to experience that. I didn't realize how harmful that was to me. And I know that sounds maybe a little bit convoluted because there's so much I could unpack there, but essentially making sure that we're letting ourselves be complex individuals. In so many ways, society doesn't let us do that, because I think back to my journey as a learner and how I had to make a certain path, you know, make certain, you know, whether it's grades, making those A's, like it was such a linear path that I felt really pushed to do, that part of it didn't allow me to make those mistakes too in this process, or really lean into that evolution of it and really think of it as a role versus an identity, just being in that learning position. So the self-love that I think part of it that is very much needed is just allowing ourselves to be complex, and that we get to be complex human beings. We get to be flawed human beings. We get to be, you know, triumphant human beings. And that's part of the journey, and allowing ourselves to be human is part of the healing process.
Well, thank you for sharing your complexities with us today. Yeah. And I know they'll resonate with our listeners. They've resonated with me for sure.
Thank you. Appreciate you
being here.
So honored. And I will say, last little shameless plug for this podcast is that when I found Latina South, it felt like a breath of fresh air. I always feel like any content about Southern Latinx folks is so needed. And so it's always like finding this podcast was like a little, how do you say, like a gold nugget. I was very excited about it. So thank you for capturing these stories and for amplifying them. Really appreciate you and your work.
Thanks for saying that.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to us on Latina South. And thank you, our listener. If you like what you hear, please, please leave a review. It's one of the best ways to support our show. And thanks to the team that helps things happen behind the scenes, like Jennifer Hutchison on social media. And thanks again to Marcy Chapa, who shared this music with us. It's called Higher by the OGs. And you can find a link in our show notes. Hasta la próxima. See y'all.